Welcome to episode 206 of The Lab. I'm Brad Barton.
I'm Phil Barton.
As per usual, we have some links with more information for you to dig into if you're so inclined, and you can find those by visiting thelabwithbrad.com.
So by inclined. We, that means you. Have some links really that you bothered to find.
Yeah, this is mostly me, folks. I do have a co-host who just sort of comes along for the ride. I envy you. You know what we ought to do sometime? Up with the episode entirely. You do the research. Oh, you do most of the talking.
I don't even know what to do with that. Yeah, I'm so pressured.
No pressure. Don't worry about it. Anytime you feel... But if you don't do it next week, I'll kill you.
It's all going to be about sleeping jellyfish. That's the only subject I have.
Sweet slumbering jellyfish. Mm-hmm. I think this will be one episode, but I did a lot of research, got excited. This might actually get broken up into two episodes. We'll find out. We are talking about how we found out what we found out about the brain.
Oh, yeah. The timeline was last time.
This is why I went out of the way to say the topic sentence early on. Last time was about how we use the brain when it's broken.
Uh-huh.
To figure out how the brain does what it does.
To so the extent now when the brain is working?
No, the brain's still broken. So, in the ongoing quest to understand the human brain and human mind, occasionally mistakes are made. And sometimes they can last for quite some time. This has happened within our lifetimes. There's a factoid floating around that we have 100 billion neurons.
Okay. Somebody just made up that number.
Yeah. As far as can be told, somebody pulled that number out of the ether, and it became the fact. But recently, and I have a link to a TED Talk about this, they found a way to actually count neurons. Mm-hmm. Now, mind you, when you've got billions of anything, nobody's actually going through and physically going one, two, three.
Can you imagine?
Yeah. So there's some statistical extrapolation going on. But the number they came up with was 86 billion. But
that's a lot.
YouTubes, podcasts, even professional scientists still float out the number 100 billion. I guess 14 billion neurons, plus or minus, is no big deal between friends.
They're close enough.
But that one is still sort of hanging on, just as a factoid, even though people know better now. But let's go back to good old Galen from the Roman Empire.
Oh, okay.
Yes, because I really didn't give Galen his due.
Okay.
And he gave a lecture about the brain in the year 177 A.D.,
Was it like a TED Talk?
Like a TED Talk. Well,
that was the question.
It was as TED Talk as you could get in Rome in the year 177 AD.
His robe, talking to as many people as he could get attention of.
Yeah, Galen was a bit of a rebel. He had the radical notion that in order to treat a patient, one should pay attention to their symptoms.
That's radical.
That was radical. He called it their prognosis. Different than the sort of mysticism and divination that was commonly used in Rome at the time.
Oh.
So he had this other idea, and he was doing rather well. In fact, he was successful enough to get a bit of jealousy. Left Rome about two steps ahead of an assassin's knife.
Oof.
Yes, medical practice in Rome was literally cutthroat.
Yeah.
So it's ironic that such a rebel-like fellow ended up being sort of the Pope of medicine in the Middle Ages.
Good for him.
Yeah, well, he got over to Constantinople. I got this story from Wikipedia. I haven't been able to verify it, but apparently to audition to take care of the gladiators, he cut open a ape's belly.
Okay.
And he challenged all the other physicians there to heal it.
Oh.
none of them would even try. And then he put it back together, and the monkey lived, and he got the gig.
That kind of reminds me of a We Were Sent to Guard. This might get edited out. Anyways, we were sent to guard a facility that was normally used for break and entry, house-to-house searches, sort of
practice?
Yeah. But in this case, it was all covered in plastic, and there was hair and blood everywhere. apparently, what we were guarding was the leavings of training the medics how to repair wounds.
Huh.
Which means they brought a bunch of live goats.
Really?
Yeah, and they cut them and taught the medics how to repair. Yeah. Slice them wide open, ready, set, repair this goat. Yeah. Anyways.
It's interesting to see Galen's reasoning. Mm-hmm. He had determined that things like reasoning and taking action, parsing your senses and moving your body, all sat within the brain.
Ah, hot day.
But he also thought that personality and emotion might live in places like the heart and liver.
Okay, so not quite there, but okay.
No, not quite there. He also determined that the cerebral cortex was soft and squishy, so it must be for interpreting the senses. Because if it's soft and squishy, the senses can put an impression on it.
That makes no sense at all. Other
nerves that go out to cause motion, those had to be hard.
Okay.
It's actually...
I'm not getting the liver thing. Everybody's about the liver.
I don't get the liver either. Just
the liver has nothing to... Yeah, okay. That actually comes up in Korean culture. To have a weak liver is to be not courageous. Not your liver is all about your courage for some god awful reason.
Yeah, well, in our culture, there's still things left over from the idea that the heart had something to do with it, like learn something by heart or get your heart broken.
Yeah.
Or yeah, in every single Disney movie, what the heart desires.
Oh, Disney. Oh.
But medieval times come along. The fall of Rome, the city, left a kind of a mess behind.
Mm-hmm.
And most of what Galen had written was in Greek.
Mm.
So very few bits of Galen left. However, over in Constantinople, Eastern Rome, Byzantine Empire, whatever you want to call it, the Muslim scholars picked up Galen.
Okay.
And they did translations from Greek into Latin and from Greek into Arabic.
Okay, yeah.
And roughly end of the 1400s, beginning of the 1500s, the Eastern Roman Empire fell. Constantinople was sacked by the Turks, renamed Istanbul.
Yep, there it is.
And a bunch of scholars fled towards the west, where recently someone had come up with the printing press. I'm fuzzy on the history here. I found out Constantinople fell. That was all I knew. Displaced a bunch of scholars. So along comes the Renaissance. We now have many more copies of Galen's work and a willingness to cut into human cadavers to check on it.
Somebody got over it. They're like, let's see what's actually really going on.
They had actually cut into some cadavers during the medieval times. It's interesting because people would report, you see what you expect to see. So they would give reports about what they were finding. And if they saw something other than what Galen had said, they would ignore it.
Not to completely throw a wrench into the works, but didn't Leonardo da Vinci cut into people?
I actually don't know. Yes. Okay. I'm going to say that's... yes. It seems like the kind of thing he'd do.
Balls. Okay.
Yeah. You also got an idea going all the way back to the ancient Greeks that the ventricles were where the intelligence lived.
Which gets me because...
Yeah, because you end up with these detailed drawings of the ventricles in the brain.
How do you get that?
Focused on that. And meanwhile, like I don't even know how many ventricles there are for certain, because that's not where intelligence is kept, as far as I know. I don't really care.
I'm still a little hazy on what ventricles are, and but that's okay.
In the brain,
because who cares?
Okay, that too. I'm sitting here trying to explain things. So meanwhile, Renaissance is finding out where Galen was mistaken and updating our knowledge about the human body and the human brain. Bloodletting, however, the idea that you could heal a patient by bleeding them, stuck around well into the 1800s.
There are some honest applications.
Oh, sure. Say you get a head injury.
Yeah.
And you've got cerebral edema. Basically, you've got bruising on the brain, a bit of blood building up pressure where it shouldn't. Mm-hmm. One of the ways to deal with that is stick a shunt in there.
Yeah.
Or a trepanation, where they'd remove part of the skull in order to relieve that pressure. Or for oddball spiritual reasons, that particular technique goes all the way back to the Stone Age.
Yeah, they keep showing the one skull, I think it was Egyptian, where there's a square hole cut out of it on purpose.
They meant it.
Or if, you know, you reattach a finger, you can stick...
I heard of that too. Go ahead.
Stick some leeches on there to suck out the old blood. Yeah, and hopefully get the circulation going.
Are you? Do they knock you out with sleepy glass when they do this? Because I got to think, as a patient, looking down and seeing this surgical leech might be a little disturbing.
On the one hand, why?
On the one hand.
Oh no! I didn't even think of it. Woo! Why bother? But yeah, if you have a problem with leeches, yeah.
Anyway, some of the things we were talking about last time, they begin to find out that lots of what we do is in the brain. They can tell because either it has been broken or they would break it on purpose.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing how the Colosseum, yeah, I can just imagine that being a huge fount of knowledge. You know what I mean?
We moved past Galen, but I know what you're saying. Look, another guy hit on the head.
He's not moving right.
Just as another factoid, I guess the number of deaths of gladiators dropped dramatically once Galen took over.
Oh, good.
He was good at his job, man.
So way past Galen, you still have wars. You still have people, you know, that need medical attention.
Yes, and it's a good thing, too. But let's talk about blood.
Okay, let's do that.
In the 1920s, a fellow named Walter Kay, he was a physician, bumped into a patient who had abnormal arteries in the back of his head.
Okay, what's that mean?
Earlier than that, in 1855, it had been shown that the occipital lobe back of the brain, it's still the forebrain, but our forebrain is so huge that the occipital lobe, back there.
What the heck is happening right now?
I'm trying not to add more detail than necessary, but I think
there's a floor brain.
This guy had abnormal arteries so that the flow of blood inside of them was turbulent. There was a rushing sound with each sound. There was a rushing sound with each heartbeat, audible both to the patient and the doctor. And I got to say that could get annoying.
Okay, sound.
But what Walter Kay noticed, they'd have this patient sit there with his eyes closed, and you could hear the blood flowing. And then the patient would open his eyes and begin reading a newspaper. Uh-huh. And within a minute, there was a noticeable increase in the sound. The visual areas of his brain were working harder for him to read, and the blood flow increased.
And that made the sound louder.
Yes.
That would do terrible things to a man trying to go to college.
Yeah, you'd throw off your concentration. I suppose if you'd lived with it your entire life, you might be able to handle it, but I wouldn't want to try.
Me neither.
Another guy named Angela Mossel, who was working with people who were born with part of their skull missing over the frontal lobe.
Okay.
Yeah, he was fascinated by the brain's pulsations. Remember we found out the brain pulsates?
Yes, yes.
Well, it turns out those pulsations will increase in different areas of the brain, depending upon what you are doing with your brain at the time.
What time period are we talking about?
Good that was late 19th century, late 1800s.
This is not MRI town. This is
no. This was a precursor to that.
Yeah. Okay.
Modern methods include things like PET scans, fMRI, and this one's kind of neat. I got with animal studies, sometimes they'll remove part of the skull, stick a camera in there, and watch to see how much blue versus red tint.
Goodness.
Okay. You understand that blood with oxygen in it is bright red, arterial blood.
Yes.
Once that oxygen is used up, you get sort of blue-tinted blood. Mm. And that changes the color of the brain depending upon what it is doing and has been doing. So, yeah, you can get an estimation of the blood flow and how it's changing by looking at it. Mm. Which is a perfect excuse to open up skulls and put cameras in there.
But that blue-tinted, the venous blood, oxygen deprived blood will still go red in air.
Well, yeah, it picks it's up the dark. Oxygen. Just that's what it does.
Yeah.
Is it dark? Like darker than?
Yes. Yes. Actually, that's a big thing in combat medic training. Mm-hmm. This combat lifesaver. That's the training I took. Arterial. Oh, God bless it.
Arterial blood.
Super bright. And it pulses. With the heartbeat, yeah, you definitely notice a difference versus venous blood or venous blood is much darker and it oozes. And so if you're working a tourniquet, your main goal is to stop the bright red blood because that'll save a life. You don't care so much about the darker blood because more
that's just going to ooze. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
I'm really happy that we got to use ooze again and mean it. Haven't done that in a while. So what is all that blood doing? Well, that blood, amongst other things, is helping your brain produce electricity. But we'll talk about that next time. See you then.
Bye.